Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma. And we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Is that AMSR?
ASMR.
ASMR.
Nice. ASMR. Yeah. How's your week been, mate?
My week's been lovely. It's been right hot here, hasn't it?
Yeah. Man, it's been hot.
Oh, yeah.
God.
It's been all right. It's been nice. It's Glastonbury weekend, isn't it? Except no one's going to Glastonbury. So there's been an outpouring of grief across the socials, which I've been enjoying. Yeah.
Do you know what's made me realise? Somebody tweeted about this the other day. Like, the BBC is obsessed with Glastonbury.
Yes, they are.
The BBC is more obsessed with Glastonbury than I was when I was 18, and I was obsessed with Glastonbury.
But I think it's a big ticket. It's a big ticket event for those guys, you know? So I can kind of understand why. They've sent like the crew down to the site anyway, so they're doing like all sorts of non-actual festival recordings, yeah.
What are they doing, looking at cows? Like, why would you do that?
Soaking up the energy of the place.
I'd like to say at this point that I absolutely love the BBC and everything it stands for, but I do think this is a bit much.
Oh, I think it's great. I'm enjoying it. But it's also, it's Pride weekend as well, or would have been.
It would have been Pride weekend in London, yes.
So there's lots of images of people on the internet with glitter on their faces, which I'm just good. It's nice and fun.
That's an absolute delight. You're right. It is an absolute delight. Shall we segue straight into the episode then?
Well, I suppose there is a link there, isn't there?
Well, historically, we've been very bad at timing episodes with things that they're relevant to.
Yeah.
Haven't we?
We've hit the nail on the head with this one, however.
Oh, my God. And I'd like to say we planned it, but we didn't at all.
No, we didn't. No. We didn't. It was just a stroke of luck. So we have an LGBTQ+ episode for you today.
We do. We are speaking to Beth Leonard, an American.
American.
And they talked about what it's like to go through fertility treatment when you are queer and your partner is trans.
Indeed.
I guess the way they look at it is that hilarity ensues.
I think they, well, basically there's lots of frustrating situations that they find themselves in, but they, took it with a pinch of salt and a bit of humour. There is a Star Wars lunchbox involved, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, good baby naming possibilities there.
Right.
And then obviously we've got Liz and Nick in the house.
Liz and Nick in the house.
And they have, I don't want to spoil anything, but they have added to cart.
Oh my God, it's so exciting.
So exciting. We've been getting some good updates on our little WhatsApp group, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
We literally cannot give anything away.
No, shit's getting real, but we can't give anything away.
Getting real. And also, at the end of Liz and Nick's bit, they pose two questions. One about Biker Grove, which probably UK listeners will know about, but others won't.
Yeah.
And one about egg donation, how it works. And if you guys want to answer those questions, at the end of the segment, we'll give you our contact details, but you can contact them through us, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. And
oh man, the bloody boiler turned off and now it's turned back on again. What is going on?
It's really warm. Why is the boiler today? What's the boiler doing?
I don't know, but I'm nervous.
Come on, it's roasty. It's actually not that hot today, is it? It kind of, the weather broke, but it's still warm.
Yeah. Anyway, and then we're speaking to Professor Tim as well.
We are about yoga.
About yoga. Now you're a yoga-er, aren't you?
That is a real stretch. Pardon the pun. I have in the past done some yoga, but I am definitely not proficient in any way or graceful or bendy. I haven't done it for a long time, so I'm not a yogurizer.
Okay. And that's basically what the show is going to look like this week.
Excellent.
Sound like.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah. We hope you enjoy. Oh, wait a second, actually. I do have an announcement. Okay, guys, we have 9,738 followers on Instagram. We
are
so close to 10,000 followers. I can smell it. Okay. So I just want to add an additional request into this week. If you're not following us on Instagram and you are on Instagram and you fancy maybe following us on Instagram, do it now. Do it.
Tell your friends, tell your family.
Pay people if you must. I know I have been. I've been slipping everyone fivers.
That's why we're poor.
I know. It would just be quite nice, man. 10,000 is a nice milestone, isn't it?
It's a lovely milestone.
So fucking close. I'm like...
It'll give us a sense of meaningless achievement.
It will. It really will. And so if you don't know, we are at Big Fat Negative on Instagram, guys.
We are... you can also follow us on Twitter
at Big Fat Negative.
You can also see our Facebook page
at Big Fat Negative.
What do you do on Facebook? You like it?
Like
do
a page? Do you visit a page?
This is how, I mean, we're clearly very invested in Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook isn't our medium. But you could take a trip there and visit the faces on the book.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. Please do. There's a lot of people's mums posting these days. And you can also email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
Please enjoy the show.
Enjoy!
Hi!
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right.
It's great to hear.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What have you been up to this week?
Working from home.
Anything else?
Well, something happened, didn't it?
It did.
Something happened yesterday.
Before we go into what we did this week, I think there's been some other exciting news this week. It's the week that clinics can open.
Oh yeah, hooray! I knew that, hooray! This is not new information to me. I knew it.
Oh, you did know it. I'm just double-checking. It's been big news in the fertility world, you know.
I kind of forgotten, but yay!
So, yes, it's the Tuesday the 12th, so fertility clinics were able to apply to open yesterday. I think some places have actually already opened.
What about the ones near us?
No, not yet. Not yet.
It's a shame.
It is a shame.
Were you banging on their door yesterday, were you?
Yeah. Just pressed up against the window.
Let me in.
Because we did an exciting thing yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah.
What did we do?
Bought a few eggs.
Bought some eggs, people. We dropped the bomb. We bought the eggs.
Free range.
I really hope they are, you know. Do you think they're organic? Yeah, so do you want to tell the lovely people how we came to the decision of whose eggs we wanted to buy?
Well, I think it should be you that says it, because it was more your input that drove who we who we went with in the end.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously was chatting last week about the fact that there were definitely people on the list that I was far more drawn to than the one that, or the ones that looked like me. And I was a bit sort of unsure whether or not there were any rules around picking a donor. You know, do they have to look like you? Like, is it allowed to just go with somebody else? So I chatted to a few people and I spoke to the matching lady at the clinic, and she was like really good at reassuring me and basically saying, look, just go with your gut. Like, it doesn't, you know, some people do pick their donor based on looks, some people don't. It's really a very individual decision. And there was a particular lady that really, really stood out for me. And I can't remember if we spoke about this last week, but they can like leave a letter, can't they?
You can.
For any sort of potential future children. And I just really felt that what she'd written was very thoughtful, and she had some personal experience with non-genetic family, which I thought was really important. And she was really quite open to, you know, meeting any potential future children, and was kind of very clear that she would always keep her details updated. And I don't know why that was really important to me, but I just feel like we're kind of going along this unorthodox route to parenthood, and you almost like want that child to be accepted.
Yeah, also in the whole looks thing, I can't imagine that you really look at your child and go, yay, it looks like me, yay, every day. Yeah, this is amazing, it looks like me. I think it's more like they look like them.
Yeah, I get that. And I suppose if I didn't have like this whole we're not going to use my eggs thing, I probably wouldn't even think about it.
No.
But I think because
we've had to make a choice somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, and I suppose your choice, like your criteria has got to be based on something. And it's like almost having that reassurance that it's okay for it to be based on something that's really personal to you, not just the fact that they might look like me.
I think it's more exciting to have the mannerisms when they start mirroring your mannerisms that will be more exciting.
Yeah, and I think, like, I almost wanted that, because, you know, we kind of spoke with our families about it and things, and almost wanted that reassurance that everybody in our inner circle was cool with our choice, like, even though it's our choice and they really don't have a say on the decision that we make, because it's so personal, you almost just want that bit of validation from somebody to say, yeah, we support you. And we did, you know, we got that from everybody around us, which was really lovely.
I think, if it all works out, hopefully in a few years you won't even think about this anymore. In that respect.
No.
You won't, it'll be just, you won't consider how they came into the world. They're just in the world.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's really weird, like, almost that, you know, we've made this choice, like, we've bought the eggs, and, like, clinics have reopened, so it kind of feels like it could happen. Like, soon. And it's really weird to be kind of back in that hope zone.
Yeah, I'm extra nervous about my own guys now.
Yeah.
Because we took such a gamble on this. I would hate for it to be, it fall down because mine aren't up to snub.
I don't think that's the case, though, because, like, we've done the donor eggs based on medical advice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think, like, the decision that we've made not to go for a double donor is a logical one based on factual information that we have.
Yep.
So,
I hope they're right.
Well, we've got no reason to think that they're not, though, have we? So, and I think if it doesn't go our way and it doesn't work, then I don't think we could have done any more.
I just wish we could trial run one.
Do you want me to just ask? Can we just go for the one first?
Just try that one day, and if that's all good, if that one's all fertilised and whatnot, then sure, fertilise the rest of the next days.
I mean, I don't even know what the rules are. Like, obviously, we've bought 10. We went for the big guns.
Yeah. And they're all going in at once.
Christ, that'll be like the new Octonorm. Yeah, so I don't know how it works. Like, do they thaw them all and then inject them all? Or do they do it one at a time? Or do they do it based on the amount that we want to go back in? So in your case, all of them.
10.
Yeah. I don't even know how it works.
10 uplets.
Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
Anyway, we're not having them. Yeah, so I feel like I'm all a bit of a novice now in this whole process, given that I felt like a bit of a veteran of IVF. This is like a whole different ball game.
Yep.
Do
they always use ICSI with Dana, or is it the same rules as any?
I think it's the same rules as any. I think they're just using ICSI because of the antibodies.
Bloody antibodies.
The reason that we had our initial referral, but then obviously
the reason we're in this mess.
It's not the reason we're in this mess, actually. Not at all. If anything, I'm the reason we're in this mess. And we're not playing the blame game.
No.
That's what we're not here for.
No.
So yeah, big news.
Yeah.
How did you feel adding to cart?
Nervous. Yeah. And excited.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I think it's right putting yourself back into that hope/disappointment phase again. I mean, that's the only good thing about lockdown is you can put your head back in the sand for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely like quite terrifying getting back on that treadmill, isn't it? To think that actually something else could
also,
go wrong.
Also, because I can remember when we first accepted that we had to go to IVF, you just assume, oh, this is going to work then.
Yeah.
We're getting help, so it's going to work.
And really,
I don't want to fall into that trap again.
Well, no, but I was going to say it's really hard not to fall into that trap again. Because it's like, oh, but it's someone else's egg. So surely that's going to work. And actually, it might not. And that sucks. Because what do we do? Well, we know what we do then, but it really is that whole feeling of like putting your eggs in all your eggs in that basket again.
That was my plan. All the eggs in one basket. All or nothing. Roll that dice.
Yeah. It kind of hits you, doesn't it, that actually, like, you know, this really is going to be the final countdown.
Well, final in one sense. I mean, if this didn't work, there's other options.
There are other options, and we feel really comfortable that we've explored them, and they're definitely something
that we
want to
pursue. Because I can understand people's decision that if IVF doesn't work, then they'll just accept that and move on. But I think we want to be parents, so, like, you know, it's genetics aren't desperately important. We just want to be parents. So I think that option is still definitely available.
Yeah, and I feel like it's going to be probably take us a bit longer to be ready to carry on down that road, because I think as much as obviously it took us a little while to decide on the donor option, it is still IVF. Like we've said before, it's kind of still known. So it's almost just a little shift to the left, as opposed to adoption, which is like just a whole new ball game and kind of way to learn about and to kind of wrap your head around. But we don't know that, you know, that's something that we're going to have to think about yet. I mean, you never know. We may decide to do that as well.
Yeah.
Just end up with like 50 children.
Could be that case, like you're childless for ages, and they're like, in about 2 years, you've got about four kids or something.
Be like, what's her face? Pippa from Home and Away.
She's a good role model.
She was, yeah. She just took them all in.
Who was the one from Piker Grove?
Oh.
Answers on the postcard.
Yeah, I can't remember. Oh, that's annoying. I used to love that programme.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's our big news.
Yeah.
No news from the clinic. I did ring them today. Hello? Are you open yet? They're not.
I just saw your number come up. Ignored
you. I was here again. Jesus.
You're lucky you haven't been blocked yet.
That's true. No, they haven't been published on the list yet. I haven't even had an email. Like, loads of people have had emails from their clinics and stuff. But I mean, I did have an email to say we're closed and we're like doing virtual consultations and over the phone meetings and stuff. But of the reopening, there has been no communication.
Now, is that Wales in general, or is that our clinic?
I haven't seen that any clinics in Wales are on the list yet. But I think the guidance from the HFEA is UK-wide, I think. So I don't think the... Because for those of you who aren't aware, we're still locked. Wales is definitely closed for business right now. So we've kind of gone a little bit of a different route to England. So what are you wondering if that's impacted on whether or not they're going to open?
I don't know. Because it's sort of, if they're not opening Cardiff, what's the likelihood the capital city?
I don't know. I mean, they've got to apply from yesterday, so yeah. It may be that it's just taking them a little bit longer to get their procedures in place and stuff.
Yeah.
Plus, obviously, I don't know how many couples there were before us who had treatment cancelled, mid-cycle, things like that. So it may be that they're going to be operating some sort of waiting list system. So, you know, even though we've secured our eggs, as it were,
yeah,
it may be that things don't kick off for a little while anyway. So we'll see. But yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed we'll hear something soon. But if anybody knows how these things work, can we just do one?
If anyone knows the woman in Piker Grove,
oh yeah, let us know.
That'd also be. I mean, I'm sure I could Google it in a minute, but
yeah, okay. So requests from this week are: can we just do one egg at a time? And
who was the foster carer in Piker Grove?
Who was the foster carer in Piker Grove? Thanks, guys. We'll catch up with you next week and hopefully give you the answers to those two questions.
There's a pub quiz for you.
Yeah. Have a good week, everyone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Beth, what an absolute pleasure to have you on this podcast. You are speaking to us from America.
Yes, the Northwest USA.
Oh, wow.
So, Beth, as you know, we start every podcast by asking people to tell us about the journey.
Yes.
Can you tell us about yours?
Yes, I can. I made some notes on my journey because I was prepared for this question.
For that's great. We like preparation.
Yeah, I was like, I should make some notes. so I think the first thing to note about my journey is that I'm a queer person. So I identify as queer, and my partner identifies as queer and transmasculine. And for me, just for those that don't know, and I think being queer can mean different things to a lot of different people, but to me and to my community, it means both something about my sexual orientation, who I tend to partner with, and also it's about my gender. So I identify as non-binary gender, so I'm not like, don't identify as male or female, and I kind of exist somewhere outside of that. And my gender team, it tends to shift around with the years in my life. So there's some years I'll wear like a ton of jewelry and like tulle, you know, and some years I'm wearing like men's polo shirts and binding my chest and stuff like that. So it's not like a fixed point for me. And the reason why I start there is because when I was 31, my partner and I decided we wanted to start talking about having a baby and what that looked like. And there's a couple things that were different for us that maybe are unique that from other people that aren't queer and trans or part of the LGBTQ community generally. So the first part of that equation was talking about how we were going to get sperm, because neither of us make sperm. So we were like, okay, we're going to have to figure out.
So you needed some.
Yeah, we have to get. I've heard that that's a critical component to this baby making thing. And so we need to figure.
Unfortunately.
And I dabbled in heterosexuality in my 20s. So I'm familiar with the substance, and, you know, it's.
It's gross.
I was like, okay,
it's not
great.
A nice thing.
I know what's coming. We need to procure some somehow. Okay. So trying to figure out how to get sperm, like where we were going to get it, and then if we were going to use a known donor or an anonymous donor was a question that we had to discuss. And then the other thing that I was thinking about and really worried about at the time was how I was going to experience pregnancy with my gender. Right? So I was like, oh, that's going to be weird. Like, what am I going to wear? Mm. I was really concerned about what I was going to wear when I was pregnant. I was like,
that's a real
right?
good question. Fucking hell.
It's like, am I going to wear oversized polo shirts? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. But I remember spending a significant amount of time concerned about that, which seems ridiculous to me now. Because I just jumped over the whole like getting pregnant thing and went right to like, oh, that's going to be odd. And I'm going to have to interact with this system that's going to read me as a woman. And that's okay. I mean, for me, that's okay. For a lot of people, it's not. But it was something I spent significant time.
The assumption that you're going to get pregnant.
Yeah. So it was
right
there. And we opened this conversation thinking that those are going to be the two hardest parts of pregnancy.
Okay.
And the other thing is that, you know, I was 31, we knew we had to start talking about these things, and that like that conversation was really the initiation of us trying, right? So as opposed to trying through sex, which wasn't going to work for us, and baby was never going to come from that activity, our like initiation was just starting the conversation about how we were going to procure sperm. There's a lot that goes into that conversation. Directed donor, so someone you know, versus anonymous donor, whether or not you're going to try to get pregnant at home, so like self-inseminate or go to a clinic. There was all of those kind of details to work out with my partner, and we had to come together with where we landed on what we both wanted.
That must have been difficult.
It was. So the funny part of it now is that I, at the time, was very against paying for sperm. I'm like, sperm has got to be our species' most renewable resource. It's everywhere. I feel like I could scrape it off the walls in clubs, you know? Like,
that is such a good line. I'm going to use that line.
You should. Feel free. It's like I could go down to a bar down the street and just get some, right? Like I could work that. I don't want to pay for it. And it's like $700 to $1,000 to buy vials of sperm here. And so I was really against paying money to get pregnant. I thought that, you know, it shouldn't have to cost money. We don't, you know, just because we're queer doesn't mean we should have to kind of go broke. Paying for it now. Absolutely. And again, now I'm like, oh, I wish I only had to pay for sperm. You know, like, going back in time.
Yeah.
So we decided that we would use a known donor, and that we were going to approach a buddy of mine that I see, we're like hiking friends. We backpack and camp together a couple times a year, and he's a good guy, and we thought he would be someone that we could like stand to have in our lives for the future, and that he, you know, would
really important.
It's a hard question because it's not just where you get the sperm from, but like, what do you want your relationship with that person to be if it's someone that you know? So some people I know have used like a sibling sperm, like their partner's sibling sperm or family member or close friend, and that felt a little too close to for us also. We don't have a sibling. Like my partner doesn't have a sibling that produces sperm that we could use, and we didn't want someone so close that we would see them like every day. We thought maybe like a distant uncle figure would be something that worked for us. So we made that decision. It probably took us 6 months of conversation to just land on what we wanted to do as a couple. And then we had to like approach the friend, right? So that's an interesting
That's surely the hardest conversation as well.
Oh my God.
I opened it over text message, which was fine. Which I imagine was an interesting text to get to receive on the other end, so we approached him and he was really open to the idea, but wanted to have like some significant conversations about what that meant. Like, it's not just again giving the sample, but what does it mean if I'm biologically related to this person? Like, what do we want that relationship to look like? What are we all comfortable with? And so, I mean, at that point, I think it took us about 6 months from the initial approach to when the decision was made to kind of work through all the details, which at the time felt really good. It felt like a really positive interaction. It felt like we were working through a lot of, you know, different things that could come up. He talked to his family about it, so he was really open with his like parents and siblings that he was going to do this and that there would be this relationship in his life. We had a lot of conversations together about what we wanted, like making it clear that me and my partner would be parents and that he could be involved but as a non-parental figure, and making sure we worked all of that out. And then we also had to sign something about it. It's like a document, a legal.
I was going to say, like, mm-hmm. You're a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer,
right?
Yeah. So,
what are the contracts involved in this scenario?
We just did a sperm donor agreement, and you know, something to note here too is that, you know, I'm queer and part of queer community, and this is not something that is uncommon in my community.
Okay.
So I talked to several friends about what kind of document did you use, you know, because I had known all these people I knew had babies were using donors. A lot of them are using known donors. So I got a couple sample documents from some friends like, that they had used. There's a midwife practice in the area in the Northwest that like has a sample sperm donor agreement on their website that you can use. And so,
oh, brilliant. You can copy and paste.
Yeah. Copied and pasted it, kind of worked through it. We added some stuff to make it specific. And then we got it notarized. So we went to a bank and all three sat there and got it notarized, which again, the notary, I can't imagine what was going through his head. It's a sprint agreement. But so we were all good to go. And so, you know, also during that time when we were negotiating the kind of details, I was doing all the tracking, like temperature tracking and peeing on the little ovulation strips and, you know, getting to know my body and cervical, you know, mucus, all of that fun stuff that we talk about, familiar with all of the different phases of my cycle.
The head fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So it felt like I should, even then I was like, well, if my period doesn't come on time, does that, you know, you kind of think that maybe you could be pregnant even though there's like no sperm. There was no sperm nearby.
Oh, totally. Your brain goes to places there's just no way.
Yeah, just like,
and then you Google, has this happened?
Right, yeah. I think it did. Yeah. Like there's a religion, I think, based off of it happening.
Yeah, like a couple of thousand years ago. Yeah.
Something.
There's
one
documented
really obscure religion. <Yeah. laughs>
So why my mind went there, you know. Like, maybe it's immaculate. I don't know. So, you know, by the time we signed the agreement and I had done all the tracking, it had been over a year of kind of negotiating this and talking about it and having it be pretty present in my brain and in my life. And so the first time we tried, I was just like, it will work. You know, like,
of course,
it's definitely going to work.
We've got the data, I guess.
Yeah, we got I know how to do it. I did a lot of, again, research with both my friends who had done self-insemination and using some like trusted internet resources about how to do that most effectively. And, you know, the process of going to pick up sperm and self-inseminating is its own fun adventure.
I mean, I want to hear more about
this.
Yeah. So we both live in the same city in Seattle, both us and our donor, but we don't live close together. And so knowing that we had to, like, once the sample's produced, we needed to use it within an hour. What it meant is that we had to go to his house and kind of sit outside and wait for him to come out with it. And then we went somewhere to use it, like in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And so what we did is we exchanged lunch boxes, insulated lunch boxes, to keep the sample warm. Right, so like he handed us, I purchased a couple, they were Star Wars themed lunch boxes, which we thought were hilarious, but like he gave us his sample and this insulated like Kylo Ren lunch box, and then we gave him an insulated lunch box that had a beer in it, like a cold beer, and we just like traded it in these like dark alleyways outside of his house, which I'm sure looked super sketchy to anyone that was watching.
I love it.
Yeah, and we thought at the time, we're like, isn't this a great story? Like, when our kid goes to elementary school, we're totally going to use these lunch boxes. Like, just save these.
You'd have to call the baby Kylo.
Right? Yeah. There was no other answer. I mean, that decision was made for us if it had worked.
It's a great name. Okay.
Like, tell me the origin of my name. I'd be like, well, it has nothing to do with the film. It's not everything to do with the lunchbox. So we did that, and then we had to go. Because we, you know, we weren't going to, I felt uncomfortable going into the donor's house to do this deed, right? Mm-hmm. So we ended up in like a parking lot at a local public park, in like a dark corner behind a dumpster, you know, trying to do this insemination in the back of the car, which is his own. It was, at the time, was pretty hilarious, mostly because we didn't get caught, you know, like it's like no one came with a flashlight in the window trying to figure out what we were doing, but
can you imagine?
Yeah, the risk of that was just a thrill ride every time.
I love it.
And so it was, you know, it was a lot of effort to do that. We did it like 3 nights in a row every month around when I ovulated. And so I think with the investment of that prior year of negotiating and then like all of the effort that went into doing the insemination, and I'm a lawyer, I'm very type A, I'm very focused on process and doing things correctly, so the best that I can tell.
Getting results.
Yeah, and so I was like, if we do this right, it's just going to work. And it didn't. It didn't work the first time, and it didn't work the seventh time, you know, like after 7 months of trying this, with some breaks, you know, like when people are out of, you know, if people are out of town, you can't do this. And it was a lot harder than I thought it would be, because going into it, I thought, well, you know, don't get too tied to it. I think, you know, you talk about that a lot on the podcast, where you think you should be able to be stronger through those moments of loss, but it gets increasingly more difficult every month. And so I started to wonder if something was wrong. I thought something might be wrong with the sperm. Also because it's just gross. If you've ever handled someone's sperm that you're not sleeping with, or even that you are, it's just not, it's not great. It's also hard to look at it and be like, is this going to create life, or is this just disgusting? You know, I don't know. So I started to think there was something wrong with the sperm, or that I was doing, like we were doing the insemination wrong. And I think something that happened that I think is interesting and related to what other folks experience when they're going through this is that my friends started to give me advice and tips, kind of similar to what other people, people that are heterosexual, talk about how everyone tells them to relax, or like,
it's the best thing.
Yeah, it's terrible. Off. So I got that. Like, just relax, it will work. And then I also got like tips on how to do this differently. So it was like, well, are you using a plastic like syringe to like suck the sperm up out of the cup, or using a glass one because you shoot a glass, or like, are you using the syringe?
Because the BPAs.
Because the BPAs, or like you should be using the cervical cap thing, you know, like put it in the cap and then put the cap in, or you should be doing some kind of ritual around it to make it meaningful. Or interestingly, people were like, you should have an orgasm before, and other people were like, you should have an orgasm after, which I still am like, if people with uteruses were required to have orgasms to create life,
there would be very few people,
right? And so, but all of this information was coming, which just added to the stress. And then every month it didn't work. It just, you know, there's just so many questions that you start to ask. And so I started to want medical intervention for that reason, because it was just too many variables. So even though technically it had only been 8 tries, it felt to me like a year and 8 tries, like a year of prep and 8 tries.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. So it was, you know, started when I was talking about when I was 31. This brings me to about, that was 33, when we went to the clinic. And we had a sperm tested, and the sperm was like fine, not great, could be a problem, not like, it wasn't awesome. There was some question to it. And so we were toying with the idea of maybe using a frozen derm, like frozen donor that had awesome sperm. So can we eliminate that variable? And then also wanted to make sure that everything was okay with me and that we had, like, you know, I started to want to have the ultrasound where they're like, you're going to ovulate now and we're going to shoot it in at this time and we can see it, you know. Basically, in my mind, I was like, they'll be able to see conception happening, even though I know that's not how it works. And so I then again thought it was just going to work. I was like, okay, we tried that. We did our DIY, mm-hmm. you know, car yeah. in the park.
We've given it a good thing. Shot.
Yeah.
yeah. We're going to try this now. And so I found a provider who's also queer that I knew other people went to. And, you know, our community is really good at talking about sperm, talking about donors, talking about donor contracts, talking about how to handle sperm and do insemination. But what I learned is that that's kind of where it ends. Like, once you get to the clinic and medical intervention, there's not a lot of conversation about what might happen after that. And so I, you know, for having felt feeling like I had so much information about this process from my community and my research, I didn't really know what fertility evaluation and testing was going to look like, which is not great. It's not great, as you know.
It's not fun. You kind of walk into the clinic and are a bit bombarded with information and come away like...
Right? It also makes me really mad at all of the education I got about conception and like baby making. Yeah. It's like, really?
Don't have sex because you'll get pregnant.
It's like, it's really hard to get pregnant, actually, for a lot of
fucking really fucking hard.
And then I want it to be easy. Like, now I'm like, I wish I could just sit on a toilet seat, you know, like they scare you. Like, don't sit, you know, sperm.
Yeah. Oh my God, the toilet seat thing.
Yeah. I would love if that was true. No, but... yeah, so I got the blood work done, and then they did the follicle count. That was all fine, and then we did the HSG test.
I love that.
Yeah, and that test revealed that both my fallopian tubes were blocked, so they don't work. It's also, I think, Emma, you had that test done and said it was excruciating.
I had it twice. Yeah. Once was fine. The second time was horrendous.
Yeah, I had the excruciating experience, which was, and it was also surprising, I think, because... Again, they're like, you know, for 95% of people, this is fine. You know, there was nothing in my history that indicated that I would have this problem. And so I was pretty unprepared for it in the moment.
Do you know why it's happened?
No, oh, they don't. God. It's non-diagnostic. It's possible. Like, this is something they can't really say. I did have salmonella bad when I was younger, like in my young teenage years. And it could be that. But it's like, they don't really know. There's nothing that clearly indicates that this would be the case. And so I just have non-diagnostic bilateral tubal blockage or something is what it says on my chart. So
you can't even blame it on anyone.
No, I can't.
I blame it on my doctor.
Yeah. Maybe I'll blame it on your doctor. That's
cool.
I think so. Yeah. Just,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Throw it all in.
They'll take it on the chin.
It's gotta be someone's fault, right?
Yay.
Oh, so that's big news.
Yeah, that was big news. And I think for everyone that finds out the news, it's devastating. But it also was just like all of the contracting and with the donor and all of that experience, it just made that all feel ridiculous. You know, like I was doing all this stuff and it was never going to work, you know, and I didn't know. And I rejected medical intervention when really I should have done that. You know, almost 2 years prior, like if I would have known 2 years prior and gotten that time back, I think there's like all those thoughts that go through your head.
Was there a sense of relief that you kind of knew why it hadn't worked, or is it just you're just furious? So
I was pretty mad. I mean, because I think that going into it, I was like, it's the sperm that doesn't work. You know, I was like, that was like, I had already landed on that being the reason why. Yeah. And so I really was like, I had to do this evaluation before they would do the IUI treatment. And so I was just, I really just like scheduled it as fast as I could to get through it. It never occurred to me that something would actually be wrong with me. It's just part of the story, I think.
I think that's a pretty common experience that you go in, find out something's wrong with you. And I think most people think there's nothing wrong with me. Unless like you've got obvious symptoms like PCOS or, you know, a mad cycle or something. And then you're like, why have I just spent 2 years or like a year and a half trying really, really hard to do this? Mm-hmm. Like scheduling sex or scheduling whatever.
And I think that really exposes the problem. I think one of the things your podcast is trying to do, right, is to talk about this, because no one talks about it. So I think it's really presented as this really rare thing that very few people have, and it's really hard, and like don't even look there. And so yeah, like that realization, and the surprise and shock of it, I think, is a product of that kind of stigma and shame around needing help with fertility. I think even in the queer community, I love my community. It's beautiful. We really help each other, but we don't talk about IVF. Like, one of my first thoughts was like, I can't do IVF. Queer people don't do IVF. Like, of course they do. Of course we do. But it was with the amount of time I have spent talking about sperm and donors and like even IUI openly with my community, I still don't have very many people I talk to about IVF, and those that I do talk to, it's like still this like secret thing we can't share. Like, I can't share that other people have had this experience, even though we all know that there was some intervention because it's two people with uteruses that have had a baby. So something had to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What was it? You know, I don't know why IVF is
so strange.
Yeah,
that
it's off the table. I think it's just like part of the same thing that everyone that goes through IVF experiences. In that funny story, in that moment, the doctor who realized that I knew what was going on, he was like, oh, you know, this person realizes that they need IVF, looked at my partner, and like, it says all over our chart that he's trans, like that we were using a donor, and the doctor, who was just trying to be helpful, looked at him and was like, well, how are your sperm counts?
Oh,
and it was like, like,
pretty bad.
Yeah, he was like, I don't, man. And I just like unleashed on the doctor, which was inappropriate because I was upset, like, about the good news. But that was a funny moment.
And how has that been generally with your clinic? Are they used to this, or are they kind of finding it difficult?
They're wonderful. I think the clinic and everyone that I've interacted with there has been wonderful. They try to be really supportive of queer people, you know, people of all different walks of life. And so, like, in consultation, there's been nothing that has come up that has been problematic. I think what happens is that they forget. I think that the norm for them is working with heterosexual people, as is the norm, right? And so, and my partner passes, so people read him as male, which is great. That's what he wants. But it's, so I think it, when they see us in Seattle, where a lot of people have like differing gender presentations, they just forget and read us as heterosexual, and then do funny things. Like, they, when I had my retrieval done, they showed him where the like sample room was that he was going to go to. I was like, you know, just look at,
come on,
just
guys.
Like, so if they're not looking at the chart, it doesn't flag for them that it would be something they had to consider.
And are you guys able to laugh at that shit, or does it just piss you off so much that you just,
we laugh at it
around the bend?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we're able to laugh at it, but I don't think that's true for everyone. And I think, you know, we both have had much more traumatic experiences with the medical system, particularly my partner, around gender. And so this is like, it seems kind of trivial. Like, that's hilarious. Like, my partner was like, he told the nurse when she showed him where the EJAC room was, he was like, I can go in there, but I don't think I'm going to get you anything that you want to use. And then she just looked at the chart, you know, and realized the mistake she had made. And it does mean that we have to make sure that they like had our sperm, like, and on that day when there's all that stress going on. I was like, do you know, even, you know, you need to thaw that vial of sperm. Do you have that? Like, make sure. So there's a little extra due diligence there.
That's a little heart attack that you don't need in that situation.
Like, oh, did they lose it? Do they know it's ours? We did, you know, I did end up paying for sperm, just so you know. Like, my original fear in the day had to do that. Was the least, you know, because in the US we don't have coverage for this. So it was the least expensive part of this process, which is, you know, some great irony.
And how did it feel when you were going through that part? Did you feel kind of resentful, or were you just wanted to get through it?
Through the
those kind of selecting the sperm and paying for it part.
That's a great question. So I didn't care at all.
Cool.
Which was me. My partner cared a lot, and so it kind of been, you know, that job or that labor got shifted to him. So he went through the like the sperm donor bank and picked a couple and ran them by me, and I was like, great, whatever. but, you know, I don't know that that was the right approach that I had. I think I was so overwhelmed at the time with everything else going on that I just couldn't even, like, in my mind, we had already selected our donor and we had this agreement and done this thing. And so I didn't really have the energy to do it again. And so that really shifted. And I guess that goes to the privilege of being in a partnership, right? Is that he was able to kind of take that over and make sure that we knew something about the donor. Because if it does work and we have a baby someday when they're 18, they'll be able to know who that person is. So it'd be nice to know that there was like some intention in selecting the donor.
We tried.
The other thing I'll mention too is that so our clinic requires, so if you use any third party donor, you have to have counseling. Which is fine. Like, we're very supportive of people doing counseling. It was just funny when we got to counseling, it was very clear that the questions, like the way that that, you know, counseling service is programmed is for people who have never considered using a donor before, and usually it's heterosexual couples.
Right.
And so, like, all the questions they would, like, ask, you know, how will your families feel about you using a donor? And we were like, well, they know.
Largely unsurprised.
or, like, how will you tell your friends? And we're like, all of our friends have used donors. Like, everyone I know that has had a baby has used a donor. And so it's just, like, we had already gone through that process. And so the counselor was, again, a wonderful person and was just kind of laughing through it with us. And she was like, I have no new information for you. But, you know, we have to check this box that you did this. And so, I think it would have been great if there had been some, like, deeper questions or something more geared to queer people, because I think that it's a really good exercise to ask those questions and make sure people are thinking about those things or having those conversations together. And just because we had done that preliminary stuff doesn't mean there's nothing else to talk about. So that would have been helpful, but we can seek that out other places, I think, as well. But it was a funny 1 hour of our lives where we almost felt like we were educating her. how this works.
And, like, and now you need to pay us for all of the education that's just taken place.
Like, oh, yeah, here, we'll see. Because we told her about, like, our sperm donor agreement. She was like, oh, you know, because they refer people to lawyers to do that. But I was like, oh, the community has tons of these. You don't need, like, people don't need to pay for them kind of thing. So, that was a fun experience.
It must be frustrating to have to use a system that's not kind of, that's set up to cater for a different group of people. And that has to kind of not make allowances. I don't know what the language I'm looking for is, but it must be frustrating to just have to deal with that. It must be tiring.
I think what's frustrating about it is that we have to think about it, you know, that there or there, that there has to be any explanation. I think we've gotten lost in it. I mean, IVF is so time intensive and emotionally intensive too, that I think there's just, we allow things to kind of slide by and happen without interrupting, you know, because there's just so much else going on.
We haven't got time.
Yeah, so it's just
to fix it,
even though our
time or energy.
Yeah, and even though their clinic has really good intentions around that, and they could do better, you know, but I'm not gonna tell them how to do that when I'm going through IVF. You know, so
Would you like to see guidelines? I think that's surely something that could happen for, you know, so that when this happens again, they know what needs to happen, what they need to say, what questionnaire they need to use instead of the fucking one that makes no sense for you whatsoever.
Yeah, or even just creativity, you know, because there might be guidelines. I actually haven't done any research on that to know, again, because I think, like, going through it, I was just trying to survive the process. But I think, you know, I live in Seattle. It's a very liberal place. There are a lot of queer people here. Our clinic has done very well, I think, in treating us and, like, not being surprised or thrown off by the fact that we're queer and trans. And it's still noticeable. Like, we still feel that we're not, like, that you're saying, like, that this wasn't built for us, or, like, when this started, we weren't the folks that were planned for. So I think that's hard. So I almost think that part of what needs to happen is, like, queer people need to talk about it more, because I think that that's the same, it's the same thing with IVF generally, infertility generally, is that it's just not something that, you know, we speak about. I mean, we do, but not when it comes to, like, a higher level of medical intervention. And so I think it's all of it. Like, because I wonder too if we felt more supported kind of out in the community, if it would matter as much what was going on in the clinic, because there's so much frustration generally with this process, which I think is like largely articulated and like made visible by like the work you guys are doing, which is really important. And so I think just feeling like we're seen as like a part of the population that goes through this process would be really helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you did your egg retrieval. Mm-hmm. What happened next?
Yes. So I did my egg retrieval in the fall. We were lucky it went well. And we did a freeze-all cycle, which is, I think, more common here. So froze them. We had planned to do a transfer in March this year.
March this year?
Yeah.
Cool.
And so
cool.
Clearly didn't happen. We got canceled. Uh-huh. Like, the COVID happened and it was canceled.
Fucking COVID.
Yeah, which was wild. You know, like that... like cycle cancellation, it's like the amount of investment, emotional investment you put into every stage of this is really wild, like something to talk about. So even though we were really supportive of the reasons why it was being canceled, it still hurts, right? You're just like, ugh, yeah. Is this never going to happen?
Definitely.
Is this some greater sign from the universe? You know, like, I think all of those.
More fucking waiting.
Yes.
Right.
So much waiting. Yeah, because at this point it's been, so I'm 34 now. So it's been, like we've been in this process for essentially 3 years, even though technically we only like tried with sperm 7 times. It was put on hold, but we did in May. We got this call, literally, like I got a call on like a Tuesday, and they were like, hey, we're open, do you want to come in tomorrow to start your transfer cycle?
What?
I was like, sure. And so that was really exciting, and we ran through a transfer cycle, and we found out a couple weeks ago it didn't work. Which is, again,
so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. It's I was surprised how devastating that was. Else that, like, again, we all need to talk about, because it's, I was intellectually prepared for it not to work. I know that there's, like,
of course,
a 50% chance it will work and a 50% chance it won't, and, like,
you
can't, you know, that the first time isn't indicative of what will ultimately happen. But it still was, like, you know, like I felt like a balloon that was deflated when you get those test results and you have to kind of scrape yourself off the floor. And it's not something we didn't tell a lot of people we were going to try. And so it's hard to figure out how to get support around that.
How do you communicate how you're feeling?
And it just impossible. Doesn't land on people in the way that you think it will, because I think, you know, just like it's hard
to
talk about.
Yeah, they don't get it.
Yeah, it's just like when you talk to people about when you're trying, it's not working, and people are like, just relax. I mean, it's the same thing. I don't think folks really understand like how.
Like, you didn't have a miscarriage, so there's been no loss.
Right. Yeah, there's no loss. You can try again. You know, and the,
It is a form of grief.
It is, and it's just like you pick yourself off the floor, and then everything keeps going too. Like, you just go back to work.
No one's there to be like, are you okay? Oh my god. And it's hard. Well, for me it was hard because I was told that IVF had been invented for people whose fallopian tubes weren't clear. Mm-hmm. And I was basically told, well, I was the right age, and so you're like running through these things and googling data for people like you, and all the signs show that it should work. And so then when it doesn't, I definitely wasn't even remotely prepared for it to not work. I was like, it's going to work. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah, and they're so encouraging the whole time, too. Like, I received a lot of that information as well. And they were like, your lining looks great. Everything's perfect.
Yeah.
It was like the embryo grading, you know. So all of those things that are kind of hard to understand. But it sounds really good. And so it was really... So I was surprised. Yeah, similarly surprised. And not really prepared for it not to work. And now, like, I don't know if this is standard in the UK, but we're gonna, like, we're doing now more evaluation before I do another transfer. So I'm gonna do some like endometrial receptivity something that's, I'm sure, gonna be uncomfortable.
just
give me more data, like more data.
Yeah
So,
you know, they just tend to tell you, they just keep throwing the embryos at you for a while, don't they, here, before they do anything further.
Just like, awesome.
Beth, it's been such a joy having you on. We've had such a nice chat. I guess our final question would be, what is your advice to other couples who are trans, who are just queer, going through the same thing?
I think my advice would be really to just know that you're not the only ones going through it. I think one of the hardest parts for us, which I discussed, is thinking that queer people didn't go through this. And so I think you just need to know that you're not alone. That if you reach out, other people will reach back. Like, as I've talked about it, people come out of the woodwork that have had similar experiences. And even though that's not the easiest way to find community, like queer IVF community, it's definitely there. And so that would be my advice, is to seek it, seek out support in your community.
So just get out there and talk about it.
Yeah, good to just talk about it. And that's something I'm going to try to do more now that I feel more emotionally able to do that. But yeah, talk about it, ask for help.
And what are your next steps?
So next steps, I'm going to do some evaluation with my clinic and get some answers if we need to change my protocol at all. And then we'll try again in the fall. So we have a couple more embryos to try. And so we're just going to keep, as I say, just throwing them in there and see if any of them stick. So we're trying to stay positive. My partner is much more positive just generally than I am. So just leaning on his optimism.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's been brilliant.
Yes, thank you so much.
Now it's time for IVF.
What the F?
IVF. We're talking yoga.
Yoga.
Your downward dog.
Namaste.
Can I tell you how bad I am at yoga?
Yes, please.
I did yoga for a while in a village hall near where we both used to work. And it was me, one of our colleagues, in fact, two of our colleagues, and five or six extremely elderly women.
Is this where you and I used to work?
Yeah.
Is it in West London?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
In Teddington.
Just checking.
In Teddington. And it was in this like really gorgeous church, but I was by a long shot the worst in the class.
Oh dear, mate.
Yeah. And then later, a few months later, my friend Holly, hi Holly, if you're listening, dragged me to a really, really fancy like yoga studio where there was a really nice instructor called Nora. And she was teaching yoga, but it was all these like really trendy, posh West London women who basically just do yoga all day, and me and Holly, who's really bendy and really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally, there were like poses where I would just fall over because I just couldn't, I didn't have the balance.
Oh dear.
It was so bad. It's just embarrassing.
Hard. I as listeners probably already know, I have dabbled. I went through a period. I got really excited about going. I did that classic thing in January where I like bought a load of classes and I was like, I'm going to become a yoga guru, and rocked up at these classes. And because I have a condition called non-allergic rhinitis, don't know if you know.
I kind of knew that.
It basically means I'm sniffy as hell.
Okay.
I'm always sniffing and sneezing. And I went through this period of like going to these yoga classes and my nose would just be pouring. And I was just like, I'm like sniffing through the class. I hated myself. And so I stopped for a while. It was awful. It was really awful. But also, I had, when we were doing IVF, I didn't have this particular problem. I was paranoid about the particular problem that we spoke to Professor Tim about, the old twisted ovaries. I was convinced I had twisted my ovaries. I definitely hadn't.
Okay, well, we'll listen to what Professor Tim had to say about it.
Namaste.
So whilst not being a fan of yoga myself, I can understand how many people swear by it. In fact, here at Oxford Fertility and at the Fertility Partnership, we actually offer, currently we're doing online yoga for our staff, and it's pretty popular. I'm not aware of any evidence at all that yoga or getting into sort of unusual positions would actually make your ovaries twist. The ovaries are very well supported inside the pelvis, and doesn't matter what position you're in, that's not going to be swinging the ovaries around and getting them into a twisting position. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. So I think if you like the idea of yoga, or you enjoy doing yoga, then go for it.
Well, guys, that's a wrap.
It is a wrap. It was, I think, a very good show.
Yes, I think it was a great show. I hope you all enjoyed it.
Yes.
And we will be back, as always, next Tuesday with...
guys from Fertility in Colour.
Yes, and some more Americans.
Some more Americans.
Can't help ourselves, can we?
No, we can't. This whole transatlantic thing is becoming very exciting.
Transatlantic motherfuckers, that's us.
See you next week, team.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.